Our boy's best friend is his mother. She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Here we have a quiet little motel, when in fact it has now become known as the scene of the crime.
Hey zombies, and welcome to another episode of the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast. This week on the show, we're going to continue our stay at the Bates Motel as we look at Psycho 2. Also this week, as you can tell from probably the quality of the sound, I still do not have an A to A USB cable, but we'll get more into that in a little bit. With us, as always, is Morty, kind of. Morty is kind of out because I put some sleeping aid in his beer today, just because I knew that if I didn't, he would be rowdy because of our guest hosts over here. Our guest hosts, again, this week, just like last week, the lady who can fall from a chair, bash her head on a counter, and not spill a drop of her alcoholic beverage, Mrs. Sherry Fountain.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Since Morty is out cold, he will not be making her uncomfortable by staring at her breasts all night. I did that for you, Sherry.
Well, thank you, because he was really getting on my nerves with it last week.
Now he wants to go to the bowling alley all the time.
I know.
He never had any interest in my job.
He's
going to
be my future stalker, you know?
So we're in campfire mode with my computer as the campfire, because finding an A to A USB cord is an insane thing, and I thought stupidly, like I always do, that I could just find one and make a quick fix instead of ordering one on the internet and waiting for it to show up, and I was incorrect. So here we are recording off of my computer mic once again. So if you want to say the show's gone to hell since Hammer's left, I guess you got a pretty good case. I can't really deny that.
All you Hammer fans, stick in there for Hammer.
Yeah, so Sherry's like 2 feet away from me, like we're sitting around a campfire.
Well, you just don't have no hot dogs and marshmallows.
We're not really around a campfire, Sherry. This is a computer.
We're going to try to be realistic. Now,
I can put up a camp... You know, I can put up a fire picture like I do on Christmas.
Yeah,
because I don't have the
do that essence thing, you know. Get a candle out.
Okay, so hopefully this is going to be the last time that this happens. But I'm past guaranteeing. But I don't think it sounded that bad last week. Not as terrible as it should have sounded. So I think we're okay. I'd like to remind you guys about the contest that we started last week, wherein if you write a review for the podcast on our new iTunes feed, you will be placed into a drawing where the winner of the drawing will get to pick our one night stand episode, and Hammer will be back for the one night stand episode. Apparently some people have tried to write reviews and they haven't shown up yet. The best that I emailed iTunes, the best I can find out is that sometimes it takes a while for the reviews to show up. You know, if you tried to review the show and it hasn't shown up yet on the iTunes feed, just email us or tweet us or do whatever it is that they call things that you do on the website. I guess leave comments. Just, yeah, get us a hold of us and let us know. And by us, I mean me. I don't know why I keep saying us. just let us know, and, you know, you'll get credit for it. I'm sure it'll be up by the time that the One Night Stand episode rolls. That was Tennessee talk.
Yeah, I know. You've been hanging around me too long.
I think you're rubbing off on me.
I didn't realize how country I sounded until I listened to it last week.
Well, I've been telling you this for like 3 years.
I was like, wow,
that you're
really?
Redneck, and you wouldn't believe me.
No, I've been fighting it, man, you know. In denial.
I think that's why Morty likes you so much. He's probably in the redneck chicks.
Yeah, that Southern Belle thing. I don't know.
With that, I am your host, Ron Martin. I'm telling you that because I never say that. And I don't want you guys to forget my name. Sherry, are you ready for some horror news?
Sure.
I will say this before we get into the horror news. If you hear like really loud clicking, that's just me pushing my button on my mouse for my computer. Last week on the podcast, it sounded like I was constantly hitting something. I was, but
it wasn't me.
It's really annoying. Horror news this week. The first thing I'm going to bring up, Sherry, did you ever watch the TV show Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
A little bit. I wasn't a huge fan of it or anything.
Why?
I don't know. The name just threw me off. Buffy.
You don't like Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Oh, I like her. It's just the name of the show.
I watched every single episode of...
Imagine that.
That particular TV show. I was turned on to it by an ex-girlfriend, and then I got stuck with it. Started buying the seasons, and I ended up watching every single episode. the best, I can tell you this, the best seasons by far of the series was seasons 2 and seasons 3. Mm-hmm. I have been quoted before as saying, from the middle of season 2 to the end of season 3 is some of the best episodic TV that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But I'm biased. Some new footage from season 2 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer cast and crew backstage has been released online. It's easy to see. I'll put a link up to it from the Facebook page. Just 30. If you're really into Buffy the Vampire Slayer and you have 30 minutes to kill.
Wasn't there a spinoff from her, that other show?
Angel.
Yeah, Angel. Couldn't think of that to save my life just then.
One of the stunt coordinators, I think. This is like home video footage from him backstage. But as of when this video was taken, Angel was not yet thought of.
Okay. Well, I did watch Angel. I watched a lot of the Angel shows.
You didn't watch Buffy?
No.
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. I just got into the Angel thing. Well,
they're the same thing.
Well, it was kind of by accident.
They're just a different group of people.
Well, at the time, I was getting off work at 3 in the morning. By the time I'd wind down and be trying to go to sleep, it was coming on real early in the morning, like 5 o'clock or something, like that 5, 6 o'clock on TBS or something, and I just got to watching it.
So if you're a big Buffy fan, I'll post that on the Facebook page. There's a, you know, 30 minutes of backstage footage. Since we are doing the Psycho franchise, here's a little bit of Psycho news. The cast of the Bates Motel is going to show up at San Diego's Comic-Con. Ooh. Sherry, do you know what San Diego's Comic-Con is?
Mm-mm.
It's a big convention with a bunch of nerdy stuff.
Yeah, well, I know what it is, but I mean,
you just told me you didn't.
Well, I didn't know if it was something different.
Okay,
you know,
well, when I asked
you... said San Diego, I thought maybe it was something different than the rest of the Comic-Con.
When I ask you if you know what something is, and you do know what it is, you should say yes.
Well, you know, you threw me off. I thought there was something different about it or something.
No, the Comic-Con travels around. There'll be one in Indianapolis as well. But the San Diego version of the Comic-Con is like the big one, the one that really matters.
Okay.
Anyway, the cast of Bates Motel is going to be at Comic-Con, probably for, I'm guessing, a panel discussion. They're going to be there on Saturday, July 20th. So if anyone's in the San Diego area and wants to get a little psycho action, they can show up on Saturday, July 20th. Looks like they're going to be a panel from 10 to 11 a.m. That's not a good time for horror fans. We don't get up that early, especially on Saturdays.
It's usually about time I'm going to bed.
Actually, if I was close, I would be interested in this because I really... Have you watched any of the new Bates Motel?
Yeah, I've seen probably about the first 4, but it seems to be coming on time before I get off work, and then I've missed a couple of them, so I got to back.
So everything that you've ever seen all rotates around the time that you get off of work.
Mm-hmm. Basically.
It doesn't even matter if it's a good quality show or not. You know, we have in this day
and age...
In this day and age, we can watch almost anything on demand, Sherry.
I know.
You're not a slave anymore. I know you're old school. I know you grew up with a black and white TV with the antennas that have the aluminum foil on them.
We actually had one you could hook up to a car battery to make it work.
I don't even doubt that. 1 minute.
No, it was an AC/DC TV. We could hook it up to a car battery.
God damn it.
I'm serious. I'm not kidding one bit.
I'd be interested to talk to Vera Farmiga, who plays Norma Bates. I think she does a really good job on that show.
Mm-hmm. She's kind of twisted.
Third set of horror news. Our buddy, Richard Matheson, I say buddy, he passed away this week. Who's 87 years old. Richard Matheson, probably most famous for I Am Legend. The book, writing I Am Legend. Hammer and I covered the film Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price on our other podcast, our very short-lived Zombie Reckoning podcast. I've seen all three versions of I Am Legend in the movies. Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price, Omega Man with, I believe, Charlton Heston's in that, and then I Am Legend with Will Smith. Have you seen any of those?
I've seen the last one. I think I've seen the first one with Vincent Price, but I've seen a lot of his movies, so they kind of all get... old memories, this one, watch this one, what, you know.
Richard Matheson was a pioneer of horror and science fiction writing. Not only did he write I Am Legend, he wrote The Incredible Shrinking Man. He wrote Stir of Echoes, if you've seen that movie.
Mm-hmm.
What Dreams May Come.
Yep.
He wrote a lot of the first season of Twilight Zone, including the famous Gremlin on the Wing episode.
Shatner
yep.
episode.
He wrote that just to mimic something that Stephen King said earlier this week. Without Richard Matheson's I Am Legend, which basically was zombies before we knew what a zombie was. And we went through this whole thing in the Zombie Reckoning podcast with Last Man on Earth. He calls them vampires, but they're zombies.
Yeah.
We just didn't know what a zombie was at that point.
Yeah, they didn't have a label for it.
When George Romero made Night of the Living Dead, he admits to borrowing heavily from Richard Matheson's vampires from I Am Legend. And every zombie movie after that borrowed everything from Night of the Living Dead. It's not unquestionable to think that without Richard Matheson, there would be no zombies
today. So he's kind of like the god of the zombies.
I mean, creator. I would say that was...
Maybe not God, but the creator of the zombie.
No, I would still say that was probably George Romero.
Mm-hmm.
But Richard Matheson was a heavy influence on George Romero. And a heavy influence on writers like Stephen
King. The idea maybe in Romero's head about the zombie. Maybe he gave him the...
Finally, speaking of Stephen King, our last story is going to be the premiere of Under the Dome last Monday. Got huge numbers. I had the most viewers of any summer series since 2007.
So it's already started?
Yeah, it's one episode in.
Oh, I missed it then.
Sherry, this is the great, wonderful thing about technology today.
Is it on demand?
You can see it on demand. You can probably see it on the computer somewhere. I know you have a computer. I've seen you.
Yeah, I know, but I'm computer stupid. You know that.
It'll probably do a better number next week because this week it went up against the last game of the Stanley Cup Finals, which dominated the 18 to 49 demographic. But I had 13.1 million viewers for the first episode, which is significant.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, these movies, these series, whatever, they're gonna throw a big number the first episode. The question is, how many of those people are going to come back and watch the second episode? Apparently, in the first episode, which I have recorded and not yet watched,
Alrighty then.
Apparently, there's already, even in the very first episode, they've already gone away from King's work. But, and a message from King this week with his blessing.
Oh, okay.
So apparently he's okay with the changes they're making. Because he even wrote like to my readers who are pissed off because they're changing shit in Under the
Dome. Don't worry, it's okay, guys.
So we'll see what happens with that Monday night when the second episode... That second episode is going to be a lot more telling about the audience than the first episode. So if they can keep, 10 million of those...
Well, yeah,
I'll be pretty impressed if they can keep 10 million of those. I don't think they will, but... We'll see. I haven't watched it yet. Anyway, that's our horror news for this week. Before we decide to get into the second movie in the Psycho franchise, I want to mention a little bit about the website. Again, just saying, hey, if you haven't subscribed to the new feed yet, you need to go do that because I've actually went to Podomatic yesterday and canceled our subscription to Podomatic. So by the end of July, we will no longer have the space to put up new episodes on Podomatic at all. So if you're on the old feed still and you want to keep listening to the podcast, one, I promise you, I'll have a USB cord and it will sound better.
the infamous.
I don't even know that you guys could even take Sherry's real accent on a microphone.
This is
probably a good thing.
Like, what is she talking about?
No, so if you haven't changed over feeds yet, you probably need to do that. Just go to the website. Up on top, there's four different little buttons. One for Twitter, one for Facebook, one for RSS feed on FeedBurner, which I think you can subscribe on there as well. But there's one for iTunes. So if you click the iTunes button, you're going to get to our preview page on the internet. And from there, you can go into your iTunes and subscribe to that particular podcast. It's the one that only has four episodes in it at the moment because we haven't added any archival. I don't even know if that's a word. We haven't had any of the archives yet.
Okay.
Because that costs money. So if you haven't done that, you got about a little under a month to get that done.
Well, I have my computer with me, and you're going to have to fix it for me.
I'm not going to do that. It literally takes 30 seconds.
Well, then you can do it. You can help me out. Come on, brother.
Also, while you're there and you're subscribing, you might as well, give us a 5-star rating or leave us a really nice review with a 5-star rating. I've done all these things.
Then you can make fun of my hick accent. I don't care. It's all good.
I do it all the time.
Oh, yeah, I'm used to it, especially up here in Indiana.
So, and also, on the website, you can leave comments on each individual show if you're interested in that. Or you can do that on the Facebook page, or you can do that through email. But we'll get all that at the end of the show. For now, we have to go back to Fairville. Fairville, California. And check back into the Bates Motel 22 years after we checked in the first time. I did notice something about last week's show without Hammer here to slow me down. I've been talking really fast again. Okay. So I'm going to try to slow things down a little bit this
week.
Take
it easy. Relax. Breathe.
Yeah. Sometimes I forget to breathe. Okay, so 1960, we got the original Psycho, which we covered on last week's show.
Yep.
So we go through the 1960s, we go through the 1970s. Horror's a big deal in the 1970s. We get to the early 80s, the whole Halloween, Friday the 13th.
So what was the year on this one?
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
The whole Friday the 13th.
Jump the gun, Sherry.
Halloween, like slasher fad is just about to hit in the early to mid 80s. And everybody says, you know what? That Psycho movie from 1960, that was a pretty good movie. Maybe we can make some more money on that. Robert Bloch, the guy who wrote the original Psycho, says, I'm going to make more money off of that because I'm going to write Psycho 2. Universal saw early drafts of Psycho 2 and told Robert Bloch, you know, this sucks. You should probably stop writing it, and we're not going to use this when we make Psycho 2 into a movie. Robert Bloch did actually publish Psycho 2, and it's a completely different story than this movie was. In Robert Bloch's version of Psycho 2, Norman Bates escapes from the mental asylum dressed as a nun, and he heads to Hollywood, even though he's assumed dead in some sort of fire. He heads to Hollywood because he hears that they're making a movie about what happened to him back in 1960.
Okay.
And of course there's bodies along the way, and it was kind of a satirical look at the Hollywood slasher genre. And Hollywood at the time was like, yeah, you probably shouldn't make fun of us because we're making the fucking movies.
One little thing that's still in my head is, like, you know, when you're watching the credits are coming on, they had someone that did the music or something. His name was Alfred Wilcox or something, and it almost made me double take or something because it was like almost like a hit, you know, like Hitchcock. Somebody, it was like there was a name in one of the credits, and I just didn't replay it to see what it was, but it caught my attention. Like, maybe
it was almost Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, it was like Alfred Wilcox or something, and it was like almost like Alfred Hitchcock. But I was like, really?
Music by Jerry Goldsmith. So I have no fucking idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was in one of the credits. I've seen it. I know I've seen it.
So what did you smoke before you came on?
There it is, Albert Whitlock, visual effects. It was Whitlock, okay.
So Albert Whitlock did the visual effects, which is...
It was really close to that, you know, it just kind of caught my attention, and I had to, like, back it up to, like...
You do understand that visual and sound are two separate...
I know, I got it messed... Listen, I got off work just a little while ago.
We only have 5 senses.
I got them confused.
So you can't get them all confused.
I just noticed the name more than anything else.
So with slashers being an easy way to make money, Universal decided it wanted to do Psycho 2, thought that it would do well, because there are still a lot of people that were obsessed with the original Psycho. The only problem is, at this point, Alfred Hitchcock has already passed away, so he cannot come back for Psycho 2. So Universal gets a guy by the name of Richard Franklin to direct Psycho 2. Richard Franklin was a student of Hitchcock's, so he kind of had an insight as to what maybe Alfred Hitchcock would have done. They wanted the Hitchcock guy, Hilton Green, to produce the movie, and Hilton Green didn't know if he should, because he's like, I don't know, Psycho's a really good movie, should we be making sequels of Hitchcock's work without him being involved in it? So he actually went to Hitchcock's daughter, Patricia Hitchcock, and got her blessing to be involved with the film.
Oh, okay.
And even the writer, the guy who wrote this was Tom Holland, but he was very careful to respect... They all had great respect for the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, hey, we're just going to cash this in. We're going to use Norman Bates because he's still a very popular character. We're going to just make a shit movie and get some money. They were all very worried about not holding up well to Hitchcock.
Yeah, well, they did like a dedication, you know, acknowledgement of Hitchcock right there at the end of it, didn't they?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And they,
you know, like thanking him for, you know, the original and
Also, I knew this time when I watched it. The first time I didn't know this when I watched it. But the first time the two main characters go into Mother's bedroom, if you look on the lower right, it's dark. They haven't turned the light on yet, so it's very shadowy. If you look on the lower right-hand side on the wall, there's the silhouette of Hitchcock.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So a little tribute to Hitchcock in that.
I didn't even notice it.
It's really noticeable once you know it's there.
Yeah.
Like, you can't not see it.
It's kind of like the little hidden things in all the Disney movies. There's always some kind of pervert thing in there you don't see.
And you're like, how can somebody not see that? Originally, they wanted this movie to be made for cable TV, which, you know, wasn't huge back in 1982. Mm-hmm. But they still wanted to make this, like, a made-for-TV cable movie. Eventually, they decided that it was good enough. They could just give it a regular release and try to make some money off of it. Anthony Perkins, after 22 years, was not interested in revisiting the role of Norman Bates. I don't think it's such a big deal now. Maybe actors are more greedy now, and they said we just want money.
Yeah.
Back in the day, actors hated playing the same character more than once. I don't know what the problem was.
Or they were afraid of getting typecast and stuff.
Perkins played Bates in 1960, and he had work steady from 1960 through 82. I mean, maybe it wasn't top-notch stuff, because this was supposedly his comeback movie, but he didn't. Like, if you look at his IMDb, he didn't lack work.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times, too, actors started out in horror, and they didn't want to just continue doing it. They wanted to do more, you know, classier roles and, you know, better stuff than just being slashers, you know. And
But Anthony Perkins,
our victim,
was not interested in becoming Norman Bates again until they offered the part to somebody else. Then he was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah, hey.
Wait a minute.
That's mine.
Do you know who almost played Anthony Perkins in this movie?
Mm.
A little guy who was the main character in the last series that we did, the last franchise that we did, the little guy I like to call Christopher Walken.
Oh, okay. He was going to do it?
Which is interesting, because I think that he would have done well, actually, as Norman Bates. I don't think very many people could pull that off, but I think maybe he could.
Yeah, because he's kind of got that creepy, kind of twisted thing going on with him.
But so when they started courting Christopher Walken, Anthony Perkins was like, okay, no, I'll do it.
Got all jealous
I'll
and
do
stuff.
It, all right?
Yeah, don't be taking that, though.
They got Vera Miles back as Lila, the sister of Marion Crane. Sometime between Psycho and Psycho 2, she actually married her dead girlfriend's
boyfriend.
So, keeping it in the family.
Mm-hmm, pretty much.
Sam Loomis nailed both of the Crane sisters.
Yeah, he got the sisters.
So, but he passed away sometime between the two movies. And for her daughter, they tried to get Jamie Lee Curtis to play the role.
Oh, okay.
Two reasons. One, Jamie Lee Curtis was big, probably the biggest name in horror in 1982.
And she
also was the daughter of Janet Leigh, who played the original
victim.
Yeah, who played the original Marion Crane, so there'd be some family resemblance for sure. And it'd be like a nice little publicity.
Kinda, yeah, just kind of keeping it in there.
Also joining the cast as Norman Bates' mental doctor is Robert Loggia.
Every time I see his name, I think of that Family Guy episode. Robert Loggia.
Me too. Loggia. L as in Loggia.
Everyone loves Loggia.
Yeah, I think about that too all the time. Whenever I see his name.
It's stuck in my
Unfortunately,
head.
For Robert Loggia, that's probably true for most people.
Seth MacFarlane done messed him up all now.
And also in one of his very, very early roles, Dennis Franz comes in and plays the sleazy guy who's taken
what
over.
Wasn't he on the NYPD Blue or something?
He was eventually, but actually the year this movie came out was the first year for Hill Street Blues, which is where he became a really big name.
Oh, okay.
And then he was on NYPD Blues, right. And, you know,
well,
showed
his ass.
Known
that.
Showed
Dad,
his ass a lot.
Yeah, Dad was a huge Hill Street Blues fan.
Because of Dennis Franz's ass.
I don't know.
But the female lead went to Meg Tilly. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because she's the younger sister of Jennifer Tilly. After I looked at Jennifer Tilly's IMDb today, because I was for sure that I saw I'd seen her in a buttload of stuff, but no, it's like three things.
Meg?
That I've seen her in.
Which one, Meg or Jennifer?
Jennifer Tilly.
Jennifer's been in more than
she's been in a lot, but I've never seen. I haven't seen.
But most she was of in it. The Chucky series.
Yeah, but I gave up on Chucky it, yeah. before. When we do the Chucky franchise on this podcast, will be the first time and probably the only time yeah. I ever watched Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky. So
well, they had it on reruns on cable for a while there, and it seemed like every time you turn around, it was on. You know?
I think I've only seen the first two Chucky films because they just seem really stupid to me.
It's kind of like the Leprechaun thing, you know?
The Leprechaun got so stupid that it was entertaining.
Yes, I know. It was so stupid. It was funny.
Chucky was still so stupid trying to take
especially
himself seriously.
Especially when they stuck him on the spaceship and stuff, you know? Leprechaun in space.
That was a good movie.
It was
good. Okay, it wasn't, but it was good. It was so bad that it turned good, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, well, whatever. I don't think so.
So Psycho 2, back to Psycho 2. Psycho 2 takes place 22 years after the original because that's when it came out, 22 years after the original.
And he was in a nut house all them years. He had a good...
Yeah, Norman Bates was in a mental institution for 22 years. The courts declared him cured after 22 years, and he was released and taken back to the Bates Motel.
Which was a bad thing to do. I mean...
Well, I kind of wondered, if you're in an insane asylum or you're in prison, maybe being in an insane asylum is different.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
But if you're in an insane asylum for 20 years... Doesn't the state, like, take over your property and it doesn't become your property anymore?
Well, it's kind of something...
Or they would connect, like, they would, like, find the next of kin or something?
Well, I don't... Maybe back in the day, you know, so it's supposed to have been, like, years and years ago. I mean...
It's only 1982.
Well, that's still quite a long time ago. I mean, they still
had... I mean,
you
already graduated from high school in 1982.
No, I hadn't. It's a matter of fact... But no, it's like they had different laws back then regarding that kind of stuff. I mean, they might put it in limbo and the state run it until he was capable enough to, you know, take it back. And if he had died in the institute, then the state would come in and take it over.
Well, the state was running it because they'd hired Dennis Franz, a guy named Warren Toomey, who was played by Dennis Franz, to run the Bates Motel while Norman was incarcerated. And they also got Norman a job for when he left...
Washing dishes.
The institution, which, yeah, he's washing dishes, which...
Or washing dishes, as we say in Tennessee.
Yeah, you guys wash
washing.
Them. You guys wash them.
Yeah, we wash them down there.
It seems to me like every movie that has a prisoner who gets a job, or a... Well, I'm saying prisoner, but this is pretty much the same thing. Somebody who gets out of some sort of institutionalization and is placed in a job by said institution, they're always either... working in the kitchen of some sort of diner, yeah. Or they're in a grocery store.
Yeah, bagging groceries or slinging slop.
Yep.
One of the two.
So Norman has a job at a diner, just kind of as, I guess, a kind of cook's assistant.
He's like a prep cook, dishwasher. That'd be his official title, I think.
I don't know. He was making some food.
No, no, that's a prep cook. He's prepping salad stuff on the side. They get your main cook, and then you get your prep.
This was kind of a dive place, so I'm guessing they didn't have fancy names.
For that's what they call it at Shoney's. Come on.
So this is where he meets Mary Samuels, which I don't know why it never clicked in Norman's head. This is the same name that Marion Crane used when she checked into his hotel.
She was Marie Samuels. When she wrote it on the thing.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it was Marie instead of Marion. She put Marie Samuels, not Mary.
It's still close enough.
Well, I know.
It's still close enough that Norman should have figured it out, don't you think?
He just got out of a nut house. He wasn't thinking correctly, you know? He's looking at having to wash dishes.
No, he just got out of the house. He was thinking correctly. That's the reason he got out.
But, I mean, you know, he's got to be pretty depressed. He's coming, oh, God, I'm going to have to...
No, he's not depressed. He just got out. They wouldn't let him out if he was depressed.
He was scared to death. Well, you gotta hide something.
Completely healed. But anyway, he meets Mary Samuels, whose life is in disarray because her boyfriend dumped her.
Supposedly.
Allegedly. For the record, even though you guys already know this, I'm gonna say it. We're gonna spoil the movie. It has like some twists and turns.
It's ruined.
But yeah, she has a broken relationship. She has nowhere to go. So she decides on the very first day that Norman Bates meets her, on the very first day that Norman Bates is out of mental institution, that it's a good idea to go home with this guy.
Oh, yeah, just automatically.
So let me ask you this, Sherry, because you had a shady past.
Oh, I have, huh?
Yeah, I'm not going to mention
well,
certain
there
things.
There are a few skeletons in the closet.
I'm not going to mention certain things.
You better not. I'll tell
you. Let me ask you this. I'm sure you've been in a situation where you got to fight with your boyfriend and you couldn't go home for a night, so you needed a place to stay.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's happened to you several times.
Once or twice.
From the stories that you've told me.
Once or twice.
Would you go home with a dude that you just met that day? And you're not drunk.
No.
You're not drunk. You're sober.
Oh, sober? No. Drunk, maybe.
Drunk, I'm sure that you've done
that. Yeah, I've been crashing in the floor somewhere.
Well, I want to say, well, I guess this was 1982, but 1982 wasn't that long ago. It just seems weird that she is like, yeah, well, I guess I'll go home with you, even though, you know, you're basically...
Well, he kind of throws it out. Doesn't he say something to her about having a motel?
Yeah, he does say that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it kind of makes her feel a little bit more safe, you know. Well, I'm going to let me stay in one of the rooms in a motel, you know.
Okay,
there
so...
There could be a little bit of security there.
When he gets to the motel, though... He finds out that Warren Toomey, the new manager of the motel, has taken the motel and basically turned it into...
A hooker dive.
basically, he turned it into, in Indianapolis, we call it the classic Motor Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And that was...
And how do you know about this place?
I'll tell you how I know about this place. It's a little shitty... I don't even know if I've talked about this on the podcast before. I might have... It's a little shitty hotel. It's directly across the street from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So 11 months out of the year, the only way it can make money is to sell rooms to, like, people that no one else will sell rooms to.
All right, well, he's
now, during May, while the race is going on, it's like $250 a room, and it's the shittiest rooms you've ever seen in your life. But for the other 11 months, like, if you were a high school kid in Indianapolis, and you couldn't get a room because you weren't 18, and you wanted to bang your girlfriend... They would give you a room.
All right, so they rent it by the hour kind of thing?
Or... No, I never rented by the hour, but I'd stayed overnight. It's just two Indian guys that own this little inn.
Mm.
They didn't care who you were. They didn't care how old you were. They just gave you a key. Yeah. If you had the money...
Don't need no ID. Just give me the money.
If you had the money and you paid in cash,
they would give... It's definitely one of them places you probably don't even want to steal the towels.
Listen to this. Every single time that you went to the room... You can never open the door by yourself. One of them always had to come out and help you get the door open.
Oh, my God.
The walls...
That's just lazy.
The walls of the bathroom didn't go all the way to the ceiling.
No.
And more than once, they had to have their wives, who worked there with them, come in and change the sheets because there was stuff on the sheets.
Oh, no. That's just so wrong.
Not stuff that you're thinking of. It was blood.
Oh, dude.
So,
either way, you know, I don't care what. It could be shit. Yeah.
But
you still have to have them change the sheets before you go in there, you know.
When you're 17 and horny, you don't really care. So I know of little hotels like that. And that's what this Bates
Motel...
That's
what the backseat of a car is for. Come on. Well, it's a lot more sanitary than that place.
Here's the thing. Your girlfriend is only going to do the backseat of the car so many times before she says, get us a fucking bed.
Oh, okay. So you've had this experience.
I will not comment
on that.
But... This is basically what the Bates Motel turned into, and being a motel that has no business, that is not on the main road, is out of the way for everybody, and no one wants to go there, especially since a bunch of people died there.
Oh, yeah. It's already got
I think this is a pretty good business model.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because in the whole first movie, Norman Bates rented out two rooms, one to somebody he killed, and one to some people who were secretly investigating him.
Yeah, the sister and the boyfriend.
And in this movie, and on the first night, Dennis Franz already has like six of the rooms rented out. Even if it's only for a few hours, at least it made some money.
Yeah, so cash flow going there.
I understand that Norman Bates isn't the kind of perv guy that Dennis Franz is, and he doesn't want his motel to have that kind of reputation. But hey, man, you're making money.
Well, you know, he wasn't even allowed to look at a girl without, you know, mama smacking him upside the head and beating him and stuff.
This motel reminds me of the apartments that you live in now.
Oh, give me a break. It's not that bad.
So Norman fires Warren on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Warren gets all pissed off because he's a sleazy fat guy.
Yep.
In a sex motel.
And drunk.
And Warren takes his fight to where Norman works, going to the diner and basically picking on Norman, picking on Mary, just because he's pissed off, because
he's
got fired.
A real sleazebag.
It's at this time that we see things aren't all right in Norman's head because he sees a note from his mom that's not there.
Which I think someone actually did plant that on him.
Well, at the time of the movie, he thinks he's insane. He has a confrontation with Warren, but even though he keeps looking at the cake knife...
I know, he wants that knife so bad.
And he knows the way he can do the knife. He shows self-restraint.
Starts sweating bullets and stuff.
He probably shows more self-restraint than you or I would.
I'd just throw the cake, you know.
Same situation. I would just eat some of the cake. Yeah. It looked pretty good. But we're not done with Warren because Warren shows up drunk at the hotel, gets to get his shit and to move out.
Which kind of shows you how stupid he is anyway. He knows he just got out of a mental institute for killing 7 people, and all he's going to do is antagonize the guy. I mean, that's kind of retarded if you ask me.
And that's another thing. They keep saying that he killed 7 people.
I can only count six. Well, they were saying there was 2 or 3 that went missing.
So 2 missing girls. His mom, his mom's boyfriend, Marion, and the investigator.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Unless there was 3 missing girls.
Well, they said there. Well, I don't know. Like, we'd have to check it back, I guess.
Well, they said 7 in this movie several times, and I actually stopped and counted.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I only get 6, but
yeah, I kind of got whatever. I was like, really?
It's not a big deal. But yes, you're right. It's not very smart to antagonize someone who has been institutionalized for killing people.
For 20 years.
And it's probably not smart to say, hey, dude, why don't you grab that knife and try to kill me? Because he probably will do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, if he stabs you, he's going to...
keeps calling him psycho. And
if he stabs you and he goes to jail, great, you win, but you're dead.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe paralyzed or sliced up and scarred.
It's like, you know, my ex. I called her psycho. She tried to stab me. Did not prove me wrong. But then again...
I could have
been
like
sad. I could have been stabbed.
It's like
so, what's interesting is Dennis Franz, who plays a sleazy drunk guy, because, you know, that's what he plays. That's what he does.
And he does a good job at it, too.
That's a surprisingly good job. Like I don't even know that he was an actor before this. They just come off the street.
And it kind of gets me, too, when he's in the diner, too, with that smoking, just coming right up to the food counter, just... with a cigarette, you know, ashes falling everywhere, and he's just blowing smoke into people's faces. And
what's interesting when you watch movies now where people smoke, because smoking has been made out to be so taboo, and most states now have that you can't smoke indoors, sort of a law. So whenever you see people smoking in old school movies, and you're never going to see people smoking in a movie at all, unless it's the bad guy or whatever.
Yeah.
Or that it's a period piece or something. So it's weird to see smoking in movies at all. But it's weirder to see smoking in the public place, like a restaurant or something.
Yeah, just huffing and puffing and carrying on, and then really pissing Norman off by blowing the smoke in his face. Because you can tell Norman's just not a smoker at all.
No, Norman's, except for killing people.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's pretty straight laced. I mean, everybody has their vices.
He doesn't drink nothing. You know, he's a goody goody.
So yeah, he pisses off Norman. Mother shows up and takes care of business.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't mention was at the beginning of the movie, they replayed the shower scene from the original Psycho, which is a little weird because...
Are you going where I'm thinking?
Maybe. I don't know. I never know what you're thinking.
This could be close.
You got redneck thoughts, and I don't... I don't think like
all
that.
All right, now let's get off the redneck thing.
This is what I'm thinking. First of all, I'm like, okay, well, why do you want to play... everybody knows that scene, that death scene. Everybody knows that death scene. You don't have to replay it. So first of all, why are you playing it? Because it's just going to remind us that the first movie is going to be better than your movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're just saying, hey, look at this. This was really good.
Yeah.
This isn't so good. Ours isn't so good, but... but no, what I noticed in that death scene that they played at the beginning of the movie reminded me of this, is since this was the 80s and we were starting into the slasher era of the... Well, we were well into the slasher era of the 80s at this point. They actually show, like... There was no blood when...
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
When Warren died, but they showed his face get sliced open with a knife. You know, Hitchcock probably wouldn't have done that, because I don't think he's a guy who goes for gore.
It seems like they added more blood to the tub. You know, when they try to replay it, it seemed like they kind of touched it up, like, you know, whenever he was stabbing her in the first one.
Oh, maybe. I didn't notice
it. It seemed like there was hardly any blood at all, just like a little trickle, you know, or whatever. But, and when it started out this one, it was like the whole bottom of the bathtub was just solid red. I mean, it's like maybe they touched it up and added that to it. Because it seemed like there was more blood in it than
I did. I think that the death scenes in this movie are more a... And we've seen this happen in other... I mean, I know you haven't been around, but we've seen this happen in other franchises, especially when the certain franchises go through the 80s. Like, I think we saw this with the Exorcist series, for sure, is the one that's coming to my head right away. Maybe the Sleepaway Camp stuff. But when you go through the 80s in your horror franchises, they tend to get a little more gory. They tend to show a little more stuff because that's what audiences wanted back then. This is kind of like...
the squirting blood, like, you know.
Yeah, even though there was no blood in this particular murder scene, you did see a knife actually come and, like, slice his face.
Yeah, he's like, oh.
And, like, blah. Yeah. That's taken care of. He's not a problem anymore. Which is kind of weird because in the first episode of Bates Motel, there's a...
yeah, like it's almost drunk, the same...
drunk guy who's been running the hotel or whatever.
Or owned it. She bought the property after it.
Right. Who gets taken care of fairly...
yeah, my mama takes him out quick.
Yeah, the real mama. Yeah. And that one takes him out. Up until this point and after this point, we keep getting... or we keep seeing... Norman keeps seeing, like, his mom and the... and
it's
the
kind
attic.
Of mixed signals. It's like you don't really know what to think about it.
Right, and he's getting weird phone calls. He's seeing, you know, the note at the diner from, you know, he thinks it's from his mom. So at this point in the film, because this wasn't your first time watching the movie, right?
No, I seen it years ago, but I really didn't remember much about it until I actually started watching it again.
Because I watched it probably 2 years ago for the first time.
So that's probably like a teen... when did you say it came out? Like
1982.
Yeah, so... I was like, I don't know, 12.
40?
No, God. Yeah, no, I was like 14, something like that.
So at this point in the movie then, do you think that when you're watching it the first time, I can't remember when I was watching it the first time, but if you had never seen it before, do you think that at this point in the movie, audiences are thinking that Norman Bates is seeing things? A mother's coming back? The mother that Norman Bates... created to kill people.
There's too much going on there where, you know, it's like showing Norman standing somewhere and then other people are seeing what he's seeing. Like when the psychiatrist, you know, he's showing off the motel.
Well, he's getting phone calls.
Yeah.
And he's talking to his mother on the phone calls.
Yeah. But the phone actually rings, so it's not his imagination that it's imagining.
Well, the phone actually rings for the viewer, but we don't know that anyone else other than Norman is hearing that ring.
Yeah, there's one time Mary, you know, hears the phone ringing too.
Well, at this point...
I'm not going to spoil it.
we're going to spoil it.
I know.
But at this point, a couple of teenage kids break into the Bates Motel house, the actual house, in the basement to have sex and do drugs. So I guess that was the cool thing
to do.
Well,
they didn't get that far.
Well, that's what they were going to do.
They took a puff off a joint.
I guess the cool thing to do while Norman was institutionalized was to break into the house, which no one was living in.
Well, yeah, it's like hanging out in a graveyard.
And to have sex in the basement. And because of this, they had like a little ratty, thin, like, look like prison-issued mattress.
Yeah.
In the root cellar.
And the old boy, you can tell he'd been there a few times. He was just like right there, had it rolled out. He knew where everything was.
Well, I have a vision. I had a vision when
like
I...
was kind of like his little love pad there.
When I watched this, I think that you've probably done this before.
Oh, my God. Now, graveyard.
But my thought when these kids broke into this house was, okay, so Norman's been out for a while. And you know it's not a very large town. And you know there's legends about the house and the motel because of the shit that happened there. And there's legends about... Norman Bates. And these kids weren't even probably alive when Norman Bates got arrested the first time.
Yeah, because they probably wasn't.
So there's probably all these stories about the place. And they have to know that he's back. And they have to see that people are living in there. So why would they still...
They're kids. They don't give a
shit. Why would they still, like, break
it
in?
It really doesn't seem to center on people gossiping about him, really. It seems like they're trying to... They almost kind of keep it hush-hush. People know, but... A lot of times back in New York, a lot of people didn't talk about things, you know? Things were kept hush hush.
I don't know. I didn't think if I was that kid, that dude, I'm not risking
you'd
my
have threw
I'm
the
not
girl
risking
away.
My life for that girl. No. She's not nearly. She was okay looking?
Yeah. You'd have thrown her at the front door and hocked ass out the window. I can see that.
I wouldn't have gone there. I did. Went to the Classic Motor Inn.
Well, you might have went there just to sneak around to see, you know, if you didn't know he was there. I mean, apparently they didn't know. I don't, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know that it's believable that anybody in that town doesn't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing they didn't really, because they didn't have anybody rumoring about it when he went to the restaurant, diner, whatever, he's working there. Everybody's like, oh, hey, Norman, welcome to the
crew. But everybody knew.
Yeah, but nobody said anything.
But everybody, well, because they're not stupid, they don't want to get stabbed.
Well, no, even when the guy's like, you know, trying to start crap with him, you know, you psycho, blah, 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 and nobody's really, like, reacting to it. Like,
because there's Norman with a knife next to him.
But you know what I'm saying? No one's, like, you know, just freaking out when they see him. Everybody just, business as usual. They're not, you know.
Maybe they're used to it there.
Could be.
This dude takes his chick down to, like, the most shitty place ever to have sex, and she's still gonna have sex with him. At some point, this chick has no self-esteem, obviously. But Mama shows up, Mother shows up,
mm-hmm.
and says, "You know what? Don't be having sex in my house."
Yep.
And the girl gets away, but the dude gets hacked. And there's this big dramatic thing where he's like, his fingernails are on the attic, and he's
trying to redo the shower scene with her hand going down the wall.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah, like that. At this point, the movie could have gone one of two ways. It could have been like, okay, this is just a random, you know, Norman Bates murder. This is what's going to sell the movie. Or it could have gone the logical way. And, hey, this kid didn't come home, so there's a fucking police investigation
mm-hmm.
looking for this kid.
And the cops just blowing it up. Oh, whatever. Yeah.
Here's why I want to learn. Then this is going to lead me to the cop, because he shows up to look for...
Now, was he in the original one, too? Because he seemed like he kind of looks familiar. He wasn't the original sheriff, but...
I don't think so.
Okay.
He says he was a deputy when...
Yeah, I was kind of wondering arrested, about that.
But I don't know. This is what I was going to say about this cop. The sheriff... He shows up at the house looking for the boy. If I'm the sheriff of a fairly small town, and I get the idea that this is a fairly small town, and I have a guy who I'm sure was in national news stories.
Yeah, serial killer.
Killing people at his motel, and he gets out of an insane asylum after 22 years.
Bonafide with papers. Nutcase.
I think that I'm going to be a little more watchful on this guy than the sheriff is, and he just seems to want to dismiss everything.
Yeah, he's
about,
like, really nonchalant about it. Oh, he's cured, hell with it, he ain't doing nothing, that's just Norman.
What's funny is they show up, they want to look in the basement, because this is supposedly, the girl said, hey, we were in the basement, my boyfriend got hacked. So they show up and they want to look in the basement. They go down to the basement. They're literally there for like 2 seconds, and the sheriff says, well, everything looks good.
And it's immaculately clean, too. The broken shelf is fixed, and no cobwebs. I mean, it's like a whole brand new room. Everything's all tidy and neat. And
well, that actually comes into play in the plot, because they ask about that, and Mary lies.
And, I mean, these people got to be moving really fast to be doing all that. By the time she runs into town, and it's supposed to be only like an hour or two span there.
Yeah, the timing is a little off on a lot of these things.
They really do a massive cleanup there, you know.
It's at this point in the movie that we find out that Mary is actually Lila and Sam Loomis's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all a big plot between Mary and Lila to make Norman go insane again.
Which is really stupid.
So that they can have him recommitted, because she's pissed off that he got out of jail because, you know, he killed her sister.
And this motherly love just astounds me, how the mother just throws her daughter in the house with the serial killer, you know, and pretty much force her. Why are you coming for him? You get back over there and you make sure he goes crazy.
Norman is a ladies' woman. I'm sorry, Norman is a ladies' man. So Mary kind of falls for Norman. Do you think that she falls for him?
I think she kind of feels sorry for him, because...
I mean, maybe not...
I don't think maybe she has that hatred that Mama has, you know? She's just going along with Mama probably for the pension or part of Daddy's whatever. You know,
I mean, I don't know that she loves him romantically, but I think that she certainly doesn't think he's capable of killing anyone.
Yeah. Well, I think she's kind of getting a connection with him, because like I said, her Mama's throwing her out there to the wolves. You know, then
she
Norman kind of
well.
Had that. Yeah, and then Norman kind of had that, you know, maybe she's seeing like a kinship, you know, because Norman's mom was like a total bitch, and then her mom's kind of a bitch. And
so,
you know,
we have this plot now where Lila's been calling Norman, pretending to be, well, Lila or Mary have been calling Norman, pretending to be his mom, and Mary puts on mother's clothes every once in a while and walks around the house
mm-hmm.
so that Norman...
sees mom.
Can see mother, yeah. So Norman's kind of, at this point, he's kind of like, I'm losing it again. He kind of realizes that he's losing
it's
it.
It's kind of scaring
him, too. By the way, a scene that we skipped over, in the very first part of the movie, Mary takes a shower in the house, not at the motel.
Oh, yeah.
And Norman also has a hole in the wall to look through to see. Norman, there's a shower... Norman has a hole to look
but
at.
But it's from Mama's room, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's like from Mom's room. Maybe Mama was watching Norman.
No. If there's a shower, Norman can watch you shower.
Yeah, he's gonna watch it
because he's a pervert. Then we do get some full frontal nudity of Mary getting out of the shower, but I believe.
Well, they kind of show the shadow. And then when it just does like a top thing, it kind of cat a corners across where it don't show the bottom half.
Well, it shows everything.
Well, not what I think.
It shows.
Through the shower curtain, yeah, but whenever
no,
she
it shows
pulls
boobs. It,
it
shows bush. Because this is
the. Through
80s.
The shower curtain, yeah.
No.
Well, I must have.
Not through the shower curtain.
I don't remember.
It shows
that.
Boobs, it shows bush, it shows butt.
Well, I know we've been over. You but. Know, when she's drying her leg off, and then. Because it seemed like she was pulling a shower, and then it spanned off from it.
Nope. You can see everything really well.
Show me the whole thing.
And she it's pulls this aside. Like and you get to see... No, you see bush. They're not
it
showing everything.
It right there.
No, it does not.
Yes, it does.
And you see... You're seeing her tits. At the very least, you're seeing her tits.
Yeah.
And you're seeing her ass.
But it does this, the catacorner thing. It shows the bush.
It doesn't matter anyway. I don't believe that's Meg Tilly. I think that's
a body double?
Body double.
Okay.
For a long time, I believe people thought... That was Jennifer Tilly as her body double, but it's not.
Mm-mm.
Although I think that you can see Jennifer Tilly naked in some movie.
I used to think they were twins because they look so much alike.
They do look a lot alike.
They look a whole lot alike. Their voices and everything are a lot similar to each other.
That's all beside the point. At this point, we're in the movie.
Get off the nudity.
They're trying to make Norman crazy, but Mary's having second thoughts because she thinks Norman's a good guy and that he can't kill people. And we get the added... complication of when the teenage boy died, Mary had locked Norman, supposedly had locked Norman.
Yeah, the door slammed behind him. He was
in
the
attic
yeah.
While the kid was getting murdered because she had to switch around everything in the mom's room.
Yeah, set it up
to try to drive him crazy. So she says he couldn't have killed this kid because I had him locked in the attic.
And she thinks it's her mom doing it.
I don't think she actually says that.
Yeah, at one point
she's no, because like, she tells her mom that someone else is in the house with yeah. them. So I don't think she thinks that's her mom.
Well, she's thinking something. Well, she thinks something's going on with her mom. She thinks her mom is like calling more and being there more than what. You know,
yeah, because she thinks somebody else is in the house.
Yeah, she's like, Mom, where are you? You know, she thinks her mom's doing a lot of stuff to it.
Mary's like, I don't want to do this shit anymore. Norman's a good guy. Lila's like, well, if you don't want to do it, then I'm going to do it. Fuck you. And I'm going to keep calling this asshole. And then at this point, Norman is getting phone calls. And he tells Mary that he's getting phone calls from his real mother.
Mm-hmm. Because they actually, the psychiatrist, whatever, his, whatever you call it, his counselor.
Yeah, his
actually
doctor.
Digs up Mom and
just
shows
show
him.
Yeah. Sure, because he was convinced that Mother was still alive. They dig up Norma Bates. He sees the body. So now
and then that's when he starts that, you know, yes, Miss Bates is dead, but my mother is not, you know,
right.
Kind of thing.
So he thinks that he's getting calls from his real mother. At the same time, people are disappearing. This teenage boy's dead, even though we never really find out what happened to that dude. The cop who says that he's slow but not inept, which I would
have to disagree.
Probably disagree with.
Yep.
Actually decides, well, maybe I should fucking sweep the swamp since, you know, we have a couple of missing person cases. And this is kind of my thing, too. Like, even when he swept the swamp and he found a suitcase and then they found a car, they called Norman and Mary to the swamp.
And they just sent them back home.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like... This is like his M.O. Yeah. He kills people and he puts them in the swamp.
Yeah.
You found a body in the swamp.
You said you were a deputy back. Did you pay attention what was going on?
And he, yes. In the last 22 years, no one was killed and put in the
he
swamp.
He was smoking shrooms and stuff back in the day. Doing a little PCP or whatever it is.
Yeah, I just didn't get it because it's like, Norman Bates kills people, puts them in the swamp, gets caught, goes to the mental institution. I'm assuming... For the 22 years he was in the mental institution, no one was killed and put in the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Norman gets out. People start disappearing. They're found in the swamp.
Okay, well, there's a distance, too.
We don't need the guy from NYPD Blue to fucking figure this out.
Yeah, well, he's in the trunk. Apparently with the boy, too.
What's
don't
what's
they
that,
find both of them
what's
in the
that
car?
Small town in Tennessee that you're from?
Dixon.
The sheriff of Dixon, Tennessee could have figured that out.
I don't think so. He's fucking moron.
I'm just saying.
Tom Wall, yeah, he is. And I did quote a name there. Hopefully I won't. Next time I go to Tennessee, I'm getting arrested. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
But now it's like...
By the opinions of law enforcement in certain areas of Tennessee is the sole opinion of Sherry, does not reflect the opinions of this particular podcast or this podcast host.
There's
my legal disclaimer. Go ahead.
But Tooney's in the trunk, and there's a difference in our time span there when Tooney dies and the boy dies, but they both wind up in the trunk, don't they?
Well, I don't know that they ever found the boy.
I think they did. I think they said they found him in the swamp, too.
How long
did he have the car parked behind the motel before he put it in the swamp? Nobody ever noticed it. That's what I want to know.
Just as they said they found him in the swamp doesn't mean that he was in the car. He could have been in the swamp, like, in a rug or something.
Okay. Weighted down with a couple bricks or something.
Okay, and if I'm Norman Bates, dude, I need to find another place to stash bodies.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because, like, the swamp isn't working out.
They already been there, done that.
I mean, he knows who Mary is, and he calls her out, and basically calls her a stupid whore.
Yeah.
But he does actually say, hey, here's some bodies. This is kind of what Norman Bates does. Maybe we should go arrest Norman.
Let's go to the house and check it out, y'all.
And that's probably his exact words. So they're going to come and look at them. But Norman knows they're coming. Mary wants to get him out of there before they show up. Now, before any of this has happened... Actually, I need to go back because I skipped over a part where Mary's mom, Lila, is going to sneak in the house. She thinks one more time, like, seeing mom, mother is going to drive Norman over the top.
Yeah, she's determined to push him over that edge.
And Robert Loggia is following her around because he knows that she's being a real bitch about things. Robert Loggia is a psychologist, but does he not have any other patients?
Apparently not.
Because he spends all this time on Norman. Maybe he's getting much of that state money.
He might have had to sign one of them disclaimers. Okay, we let him go. Whatever he does, it's on your ass. You better keep your eyes on this boy.
So while Lila is trying to get the mother costume from the basement, she gets hacked.
Oh, right in the mouth.
In another gruesome manner. Show the knife go right through her face.
In the pie hole. I mean, really? Yeah. And it was gruesome.
There's no blood again. But somehow...
It's immaculate in that basement.
Yeah.
Within seconds.
They go back in the basement, and there's no blood on the floor. The body's not there anymore. Like, a couple minutes later.
Yeah, I mean...
Mary cannot convince Norman that he's not crazy, and this was all set up by her and her mom. Because Norman is crazy, and he's lost it again. And he's convinced he's talking to his real mother. In order to combat that...
He's getting that dong face, or whatever you call it. He was getting that when he's on the phone.
No, it's not the dong face.
Well, it's getting close to it.
Yeah.
He's starting to get his little twisted...
Yeah, that's credit to Anthony Perkins and how well he knows the character. As he is losing his mind, he is getting some of those old tics back.
Yeah, you start seeing those little glimmers in his eyes and quirks and smirks and stuff.
So Mary dresses up like Mother in order to try to convince Norman that he's not crazy, that it's really her.
Not working.
And goes up to a second phone to try to talk to Norman. And unfortunately for Dr. Raymond, who's Robert Loggia, for Doctor, I guess he didn't ever heard the rule, never sneak up on anybody who has a butcher knife in their hand.
No. He screwed up big time.
Because he snuck up on Mary, and she reacted by stabbing him. Not only did he get stabbed, he fell off of the balcony and then fell onto the knife.
And I didn't quite get that either, because it didn't seem like that staircase was kind of built for him to go over a ledge and then...
It's a little weird, but I think they just wanted to be gruesome again.
Because he kind of went off of it one side like he should have just hit the floor, but somehow or another, it's like he goes over a railing and then hits another railing and it bounces through the floor.
So the knife goes up through, like, his chest.
And just pounds it through him.
And again, there's no blood.
No.
Norman's convinced that Mary's mother, and now he has to clean up the mess because Mother's been killing all these people again. Mary thinks that he is... All he wants to do is put her in the root cellar while he cleans up. She should have just went to the cellar.
Exactly.
Instead, she decides to stab him, like, in the arm.
In the hand.
In both hands. And then she takes the knife and, like cuts, like...
Well, no, he grabs the knife.
Yeah, and then she pulls it out.
And so it should have just pretty much sliced his finger to the bone. I mean, it's just been dangling.
They get to the basement, and they discover Lila's body.
And then she freaks out.
So then Mary, within 1 second, is convinced that Norman is killing everyone. And she was wrong, so she tries to kill him. But the inept, I'm sorry, the not inept, just slow, cop shows up.
Hold up, police.
Busts in the door, tells Mary to freeze. But before she has any time to do anything, he shoots her dead.
Yeah.
He's like, freeze, bam.
Yeah.
And if I'm like, motherfucker.
Well, you know,
I was frozen.
That actually happens to a lot of people in Tennessee, you know.
But this is in California. Actually, she gets, you know, shot to death by the cop and then blamed for all the murders.
I thought it was in Arizona.
No, Sunnybell.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Fairbell is in California.
My bad. Okay.
Marion Crane is from Phoenix.
Yeah.
But she, her and her mom get blamed for all the murders because why not? They're dead.
Mm-hmm.
We know whether the cop doesn't want to think this convicted killer has anything to do with any murders.
You know, and he's all crumpled up in the floor, and the crazy chick is over him with a knife, so, you know, well, he looks all innocent and shit there.
I think even if he had killed a bunch of people, this cop, I don't know, this cop would have charged him anyway.
Well, then they got that stupid
I mean, this cop act like Norman Bates saved him in Vietnam or something. Mm. Like, he could never do anything wrong. Mary died from the gunshot wound, but originally, in the original script, she didn't die from the gunshot wound. So yeah, so Norman's off scot-free. He goes back home again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do you keep going to the same house, dude? Then we get a nice little twist where the lady who runs the diner shows up.
Before that, I mean, he's got all these cut-up hands from grabbing, and he's in there shoveling coals. You know.
He gets...
But it wasn't really realistic. I mean, if your hands were almost severed to the bone, you're not going to be shoveling coals.
Okay, well, one, let me play devil's advocate here. Because one, he's Norman Bates. He's fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
And he probably has a high threshold for pain.
Well, yeah, they're probably doing shock treatments to him and all kinds of stuff in the nuthouse.
He's very skinny, so it probably was cold. That's a big house.
Mm-hmm.
Got to burn a lot of coal.
So it's like either shovel it in or...
Plus, you know, he lost a lot of blood, so he doesn't have a lot to warm him up. So, okay, and then, third of all, sometimes you just get in those rages and you don't feel pain.
Yeah, it's that adrenaline. Well, no, he doesn't...
Yeah, well, he feels it eventually. Norman makes himself some grilled cheese, which he calls a toasted cheese sandwich. And I didn't mention this while we were going through the actual scene, but I'll mention it now because I want to mention that scene anyway. Anthony Perkins and Meg Tilly did not get along. Anthony Perkins did not like her because she didn't understand, because she didn't grow up with the TV, so she had never seen the movie Psycho,
mm-hmm.
So she didn't understand why this was a big deal. So they didn't get along a whole lot, but Anthony Perkins realized that they needed another scene to kind of soften up Mary's character after she had been so mean to Norman at the beginning of the movie. So he had the writers add in that scene where he freaks out in her room because he's going crazy again, and she kind of consoles him. And I think you can really tell in that scene that it's tacked on.
Yeah. She smells like the toasted cheese sandwiches. And...
Yes. He's like, oh, you smell like... No, the dialogue really seems really forced to me and really fake. He does say, you smell like toasted, because he does call the grilled cheese toasted cheese sandwiches like my mother used to make. As a woman, Sherry, if you're being romanced by, like, let's say Morty, and Morty says, hey, baby, you smell like toasted cheese sandwiches my mama used to make.
And I'd be like, go home to your mama, bitch.
I mean, is that working on you?
No, that doesn't
How
get
much,
it.
How many white Russians do you have to drink before that works?
That sounds romantic for quite a few.
Yeah? So that scene, I thought that scene...
It's like that sexier socks on a rooster.
I have no idea what that means.
It's a southern thing.
I could have gone my whole life without hearing that phrase.
I actually heard that from a guy one time. Tell me I was sexier than socks on a rooster.
Okay, well, if any of our listeners
have
heard that line before, please email me or go to the Facebook page because I'm curious
I didn't understand it either.
In case you couldn't understand what Sherry said, and I don't blame you. Sexier than socks on a rooster.
Mm-hmm. And he thought he was being romantic.
Apparently that's sexy.
I didn't get it either, but I couldn't quit
Norman,
laughing.
Norman Bates really is an upgrade for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might need to look into
that. Serious.
I wanted to say that, I just forgot to. But that's all in the past because Mary's dead now.
Yeah.
At this point in the movie, I mean, when I first watched it, I was convinced, well, Norman killed all these people under the guise of mother again.
Yeah, and he's gotten by
with it. And he got away with it. But at this point, the old lady from the diner shows up, the one who gave him a second chance or whatever, and declares that she had been calling him because she is his real mother.
Yeah.
And that she is his biological mother, but she is the sister of Norma.
Yeah.
And gave Norman to Norma because...
She was institutionalized.
She was institutionalized, which makes a lot of sense.
Makes
actually.
It run in the family.
So apparently, this lady... Emma Spool is her name, which apparently was Norma's maiden name, was Spool.
Mm.
She wants the relationship with Norma now, and she admits to murdering all these people because...
She was protecting her
She was protecting boy. Norman because he's the only thing she has in the world. Although for the first 45 years of her life, his life, she didn't care.
She didn't give a shit. No letters, no Christmas cards, nothing.
And apparently just lived down the street.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe she was institutionalized during that time. I don't know. But so he seems more than willing to accept.
Oh, and he's just happier than a bug in a rug. Just
that he has, I don't know how happy a bug in a rug is.
Pretty happy.
A bug in my rug isn't happy because I killed that motherfucker.
If you don't see him, he's happy.
So Norman's more than willing to accept this lady at her word that she's her mom. And then he goes for, makes her tea.
And he gets the box he's always shoving to the back.
Yeah.
Mama's Which, tea.
Norman's well, that's tea. That's how he killed his mom. He poisoned tea. So I'm thinking, okay, well, he's going to poison his other mom. But, yeah, she sips on the tea, and, you know, he eats and starts eating his toasted cheese sandwich that he made. Norman just nonchalantly grabs the shovel that he was shoveling coal with and just bashes her on the fucking
head.
Yeah,
it's like, bam, matter of fact.
I really like that ending a lot.
He just picks her up. Hey, Mom, how's it going?
So now he's killed his second mom.
Mm-hmm. The real mother.
Which works out because... So now he has a new mom that he's going to probably do the exact same shit to. Because he takes her up, stairs to her room, puts her in above the window. You can hear Mama's voice.
Yeah.
Same voice from the first... Or a similar voice to the first movie. She's bossing Norman around. Tells him she doesn't like those slutty girls. And put her in the window because she wants to watch and make sure none of those slutty girls get...
Yeah.
Close to him. And that's pretty much the end of the movie. We've kind of reset... Over the course of two movies, where we were at the beginning of the first movie.
Yeah.
Because Norman's full on crazy again.
Back
and Mama's back again.
Yeah.
Basically, that's the end of the movie.
I mean, he was more the victim in this one. Everybody was killing everybody around him, trying to drive him crazy.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is he more, he's more of a sympathetic character, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, poor guy can't even get better. You know?
I don't think that he was unsympathetic in the first movie, so it's kind of a... It's kind of a weird situation, like, because most horror franchises, you'll have a guy like Jason Voorhees or Freddy Krueger, and you root for him because you understand that's it's funner that way. but with Norman Bates, you root for him because you think
he's the victim. Crap he's went through his whole life.
Two movies, I think Hitchcock and this guy Richard Franklin does a really good job of making it seem like Norman is the victim.
Yeah. It's like, no wonder he was freaking crazy. I mean, you know, look at this shit around him all the time.
I know. I would go crazy, too, if I had all these women trying to drive me crazy. Like, the only other franchise we've done so far that I can really compare this to is The Exorcist, where it had a really great first movie, and then they attempt to make money off of that, so they come out with the second movie, and that one didn't succeed so well. This one feels like they're trying to cash in on the Psycho name, and make some money because horror is getting really big in the late 70s, early 80s. But I think this was really well done for a sequel to an iconic movie. It had some problems. It wasn't as good as the original Psycho, but what it's going to be.
Because a lot of times, too, in the 80s, a lot of the sequel things, you just did not watch them. I mean, it's like the part 2 always sucked on almost everything. You know, like...
I mean, this Psycho 2 isn't as good as Halloween 2, which we haven't done yet. And I don't think it's as good as Scream 2, which we have done.
I'm talking about the older ones. It's like... Everybody, you know, it's like Friday the 13th. Nobody liked the second one. It seemed like everybody griped and complained about it.
I'm just talking about compared to other horror franchises in general. Psycho's an iconic movie that, like, you know, is worshipped by horror fans and non-horror fans. Just called this a very well-put-together movie. Like, any
just
sequel...
It's a movie classic.
Any sequel after that, I would assume, without even watching it, that it was just a attempt at cashing in on the Psycho name. But this is actually a movie that's done well. Yes,
yeah.
This is an actual movie that's done well, and in a way that kind of pays homage to Hitchcock as opposed to let's just get some money.
Yeah.
It also has that, like, twist at the end that the first Psycho had. First Psycho was like, oh, well, Norman Bates is Mama. Yeah. He's Mother.
And then it's like...
And the second...
Norma really wasn't Mama.
And then the second one, we had that little twist. Oh, well, he was that adopted. Wasn't really my mom. I have another mom, and yeah. Now she's... Well, to him, he's yeah, something he crazy. Should, I'm sure yeah. It's the same person to him, you know?
He just swapped him out.
Anyway, that's Psycho 2. Did you have anything else you wanted to add? Did I miss anything?
No, well, yeah, there's one little funny thing that kind of made me laugh my ass off a little bit. He's like right in the fight scene, you know, between, was it Tooney and Norman, whenever he calls him out in the restaurant. It's like the
well, they don't actually fight, but yeah.
Yeah, but you know, he's calling him out, you know, and everybody starts scattering all that. It's like everybody gets quiet and all you hear is the Pac-Man dying in the background.
That is kind of, yeah, I didn't hear that, but I maybe have to watch that again.
Yeah, it kind of caught me. I was like, man, that's just too much.
I wonder if that's probably done on purpose, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give Psycho 2? You gave Psycho the original 9.5.
Yeah, this one here, I'd give it more of a, like a 7.5 to an 8.
Well, you have to give it one or the other.
Okay, I'll go 8.
Okay, I actually am going to go 7.5. That was my number. So I'm glad you went 8 because I don't want to feel like I'm copying off of you.
Okay, here we go.
But it's a really solid second. Like I would recommend anyone that likes Psycho to watch this movie.
Yeah. Well, it was one of the better sequels.
Anthony Perkins does a really good job, again. And everyone else does a good enough job. Yeah. I mean, he's obviously the standout. That's Psycho 2. Next week, we will be back with Psycho 3. And we'll see if that one can hold up as well as this one did. Until then, you can go to the Facebook page and, you know, leave a comment on the Facebook page. I'll be posting some stuff throughout the week on the Facebook page. Like maybe a link to this website called Rift Tracks. You familiar with Rift Tracks?
Mm-mm.
Are you familiar with Mystery Science Theater 3000?
No.
Mystery Science Theater 3000 was a TV show. I used to watch it on Comedy Central, but I don't know what channel it originally aired on. But it was about this guy and his two robot buddies who lived in a spaceship, and they would watch really bad movies. Really
bad movies. Yeah, like they were shadowed out at the bottom of it.
Yeah, and then they would make fun of the movie.
Yeah, they were comment. Okay, yes, I do remember.
Well, those guys, they have a website called Rift Tracks.
Okay.
And I know they just recently did a commentary for Psycho 2. So I went to their website today, and for $10, you can get the video on demand of Psycho 2, and you know you get their commentary. Mm-hmm. With it. I'll post a link to that on the Facebook page. If you want to tweet us, you can tweet me, you can tweet Hammer, you can tweet Morty, you can tweet Sherry at RezZombie7 on Twitter. That's also our email account, RezZombie7@gmail.com. Go to the website, zombie7.com. Subscribe to our new feed if you haven't done it yet. You can comment on this episode. Any of the other episodes
the sexy
that we
rooster
have,
socks.
You can make comments about sexy rooster socks on this episode if you want on the website. Again, that's zombie7.com. Don't forget to at least try to leave a review of the podcast on the new iTunes feed if you want to be in the running to pick the One Night Stand episode that we do here in a couple of weeks. So I believe that is all the boring end of the podcast stuff that I have to say that you guys probably don't listen to anyway. But anyway, you can do...
I'm already turning it off.
You can do any of that stuff anytime for Sherry, for Morty, who's sleeping soundly. I'm Ron Martin. This has been the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast. We'll be back next week with Psycho 3, and we'll see you guys next week.
Is it my imagination?
Say bye, Sherry.
Bye.
It's surreal. It's just not believable. A grand absurdity.
Oh, shit.
Oh, bro. Did you spill it?
No, and the lid's on it.
Save. Minor cadaster.
What?
A minor cadaster.
That's not a real thing.
Yeah, well, it's the kids back when they were younger. It was a chaotic disaster, a cadaster. Yeah. We made up our own word.
That's ridiculous.
Hey, it's great. The kids were running around all over the neighborhood saying that shit.
You're making me angry. What was I doing?
You were dropping shit in the floor.